You're listening to WWBC Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We are heard on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere where there's humans breathing on God's magnificent planet.
That's right. As long as they got some internet, they can hear us. 1510wwbc.com. You can get us listen live button. You can get us on streaming on any one of your devices. And then, of course, we share all of that information on our websites and our social media, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And the website is SitaMediaInc.com. Of course, we share all of the pictures and bios of all of our guests. And very easily to find anything by topic or by person's name on our website. And well, it's so exciting.
What a great Monday. I woke up this morning to some really nice quotes by Buddha. You know, of course, me, I'm like a world citizen of every religion and every creed and every color. I don't see skin color. I don't see religion. I just see eyes and nose and ears and breath. People, you know. And I read something that says, sunlight isn't expensive. Depression is. Mm-hmm. Healthy food isn't expensive. Obesity is. Saving isn't expensive. Debt is. Knowledge isn't expensive. Ignorance is. Gratitude isn't expensive. Envy is. And peace isn't expensive. Ego is. Mm-hmm. And I thought about all of us and how wonderful it was to wake up this morning to another day on God's magnificent planet. And to give thanks, right?
Yeah, for gratitude.
For everything that's alive and good. And it is our inherent right to leave this planet a better place than we found it. And I think all of us here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends and all our wonderful guests, that's what we do. So for listeners who are tuning into Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, we've got former Congressman David Jolly is calling in this morning. And he is running for the governor for the state of Florida. And he is a good friend of mine, so I invited him to call in on our show. And his simple focus will be, he'll be chatting with us for a minute, putting people over politics and putting the state of Florida first, which is what we need. Our second segment, our friend Lois Gray introduced us to her wonderful daughter, Tara Gibson. And Tara is going to be on the second segment. She's going to be speaking about her run for the Brevard County School Board in District 1. So without further ado, Miss Ellen, after me partying at that wedding and dancing and, you know, I'm the girl who like calypso, reggae, Bollywood, bring it on, my kids and I, we dance and we have a great time at the party. But now we've got Congressman David Jolly on the phone, and I know he is going to talk to us a little bit this morning, and I'm super excited. Mr. Jolly, thank you so much for taking the time to call in on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends.
It is wonderful to be with you, Sita. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And you know what? You have the most wonderful family, and I follow you on social media. I've met you quite a few times. My children have met you a few times, and we believe that you're the right person for the job at this time.
Well, I appreciate that very much. Look, this is, of course, you're the candidate, your name's on the ballot, but campaigns are so much bigger than just a candidate, right? Campaigns hold a mirror up to who we are as a state, as a community, as a people. And sure, we could talk about 10-point plans and everything from education to affordability to energy, and I'm sure we'll talk about that. But at some point, this is also just about litigating who we are. And my wife and I believe that we are better than this moment we are in our politics, and we think millions of people agree with us.
Thank you so much. Well, let's talk a little bit. You know, we often see, you know, politicians who love to have a photo op with certain people, certain individuals, and then nothing happens, right? But people talk about no child should be left behind. People talk about every child having a public education for all. Talk to us a little bit about your vision for the education of our children here in the state of Florida, because to be quite honest with you, Mr. Jolly, a lot of people are really concerned about public education, the way teachers are treated, and where are we going with what's going on in the public schools?
Yeah, that's right. Cedar, look, we are a state who, through our leaders, chose 20 to 30 years ago to defund and attack public education. And as a result, we now have an education system in crisis. We have underfunded schools. Our teachers are paid dead last in the nation. We have abandoned many of the kind of secondary services, whether it's mental health counseling or food services. And then we created a choice program that, you know, certainly caters to some, but consider that we have no rules on our choice schools. They don't have to teach your kid to read. In fact, if your kid can't read, they get to kick them out. They don't have to provide access to excellence in academics or the trades or the arts. And certainly if you have a child with special needs or you don't have sufficient financial resources, you can't access many of those choice schools. So we've created a crisis, and then the answer is, what do we do about it? I very simply say we need a 10-year renaissance in public education, and there's a way to pay for it. I think you can take some of our tourist tax dollars that come into the state every day, hundreds of millions of dollars throughout the year. I think we can give teachers a 30% pay raise. We can rebuild failing schools. We can invest in services like mental health services and food services. And then I do think we have to go to our choice schools and say, if you're going to take a voucher, you're going to provide the same services and standards and offerings that our public schools do. You're going to be measured by the same metrics and credentialing. And one last thing, if you take a voucher for a kid, you don't get to charge tuition on top of that, because that's actually disenfranchising the very people it's supposed to help. So, look, I think you lead with a celebration of public education, and then you bring reforms into our choice program that ultimately, it's not about attacking choice, it's about fighting for Florida's kids.
Right. Well, and you know, in the old days, I remember once my son said to me, he said, Mom, why don't you take me out of Satellite High and put me in a private school? And I said, well, you know, your dad is already working in the ER as a physician, you know, 12-hour days. I'm already working as a nurse. Where are we going to get that money from? We pay taxes for the school in our zip code, and you are going to go to Satellite High, and that's it. And he says, well, a lot of people go to private school. I say, yeah, well, they got to work and pay for it if they want it, right? But of course, we've evolved. We all understand now that parents want a choice. The schools are getting a vouchers, but it's almost like education has become big business for a lot of places now.
Oh, listen, I do think we should ban the for-profit charter schools. I think many of the nonprofit charters and choice schools, particularly those that are partnered with our, say, state university system, many of those provide wonderful opportunities. We don't need to shut those down. But you're right, a lot of the for-profit play is, they're just private equity-backed real estate plays that, as I mentioned, they don't have to educate your kids. If it's expensive to educate a kid, they kick the kid out because they're operating on a profit margin, whereas our public schools have to make sure that every child can read, that no child gets left behind. And I just think, look, if we are going to have choice, then we need to recognize the crisis that choice has happened. But I think we also need to create a marketplace where Florida's families want to rush into a public school. And I may have shared this with you privately. You know, my family is one of those that we don't have a local public school option that reflects our community. No one in our community is sending their kid into the public school, not because the public teachers are lacking. They're giving it their all every day, but because the school environment has been so defunded. It is an old, dilapidated building where teachers are having to do jobs that 10 years ago were done by three people. And so, look, Jeb Bush was right 20 years ago. Families are going to fight for their kids before they fight for the system. Well, let's do both. Let's fight for our kids and fight for a system where every community has a quality, accessible public school. I say we need more schools and more communities with more teachers who are paid more. That's a choice. Right. We could be a state that decides to lead the nation in public education.
Yeah, sometimes we feel as though the public schools are treated according to their zip code. all children deserve a quality education. And I remember when people, when we were looking at houses to buy here, or friends, everybody wants to buy in an affluent neighborhood so that the kids could go to that public school. But the truth of the matter is, we all pay taxes, and all our children should count, no matter what zip code a child comes from. If the sidewalk need fixing, fix it. If you need school resource officers,
that's right,
put them in. If you need an updated library, put them in. You need teachers, you need a school nurse. I've been hearing of schools that have one school nurse for the entire school. And why? When, you know, when we put money in so many areas, the most important thing right now are the children in the daycare and the children who are in school, who are going to be the future for the United States of America.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Look, budgets are choices. Budgets are values. We are a state that chose to attack public education. And so you mentioned a school nurse. You know, a choice school in Florida today is not required to have a nurse. In fact, I'm confident the majority of them probably don't have nurses, because we don't put any rules on them that we put on our public schools. But you mentioned something very importantly. I was a former Republican, right? And I became an independent. Today I'm a proud Democrat. Change is part of my story. But one of the things I discovered as a Republican is we used to use language, equality of opportunity, as though we had achieved it. And so then there was nothing left to do. Well, equality of opportunity is not the last page in the book. It's the first. It's a calling for policy changes. A child born 5 miles to the north of mine tonight has far less opportunities in education, in healthcare, frankly, in transportation, in upward mobility, in job opportunities. What Barack Obama used to refer to as the ladders of opportunity. We don't have equality of opportunity right now. All you need to do is look at different zip codes and you can see that. And so, look, as a proud Democrat, not a reluctant one, I think we need to make sure that our policies are creating opportunities for everyone to achieve what is right for them. And that starts with responsible social investments in housing and healthcare and education.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I was speaking with a nurse at work, and I told her you were coming on my show and stuff. This was what she said. She said, well, ask him for me. When they ask a mom or a dad to volunteer in certain schools, where are we going to get the time when we need to work a 40-hour job to pay our mortgage,
that's right,
our health insurance, put gas in the car, put food on the table? She said, and yet still they want us to volunteer in the school. She says, I thought that's what we paid taxes for, so that our kids could get an education. I mean, the politicians don't think about this, but not everybody have that time to volunteer in That's their right. children's school.
That's exactly right. We have an economic crisis. It's more than an affordability crisis. Everybody can think about 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whether you lived in Florida or not. The reality is, where are we right now in Florida? In Florida, you have most people now unable to purchase a home, right? The average first buyer home or homeowner purchase for a first time home buyer is now over 40 years old. It used to be 27, 28. So you have a rental community in crisis where rents are going up, but they can't afford to purchase a home. If you're a homeowner, you can't afford the insurance on it now, and you can't afford your utilities in many cases either. And then in healthcare, we have more people going without healthcare than ever before, leaving their healthcare plans, unable to access their doctors. And then in education, we've abandoned public education, and we've created a choice program that's charging you money for the privilege not to teach your kids to read. If you think, Sita, then about the basics, the basic social investments that have allowed since World War II the greatest number of Americans to create their own opportunities and rise, it's been because we have had housing, healthcare, and education policies that have invested in everybody and allowed them to create their own opportunity. That coworker, that friend of yours is exactly right. Eventually, we have attacked government for so long, now we've attacked ourselves, and there's nothing left, and people have lost hope.
That's right. So now, same on the same strain of thought, you know, another friend of mine told me, well, she said, I'm going to have to sell my home and get into an apartment because the property insurance crisis is through the roof. And especially
right.
now with townhouses, too, people are like, wait a second, how can the state of Florida went after public education, they went after books, they went after teachers, and now it seems as though our state is not paying attention to how much it cost to, I mean, we're insured to death. We have health insurance, life insurance, automobile insurance. You know, some people have to have malpractice insurance. Some folks have to have pet insurance. And now you throw in the house that you live in, your sanctuary. Talk to us a little bit about the affordability for property insurance, Mr. Jolly, who's running for governor for the state of Florida.
Yeah, I think the housing insurance market has collapsed and it's not coming back. I think we have denied climate science and climate change for too long. There is no longer an affordable way to cover natural disaster risks. Hurricanes in the southeast, wildfires in California, tornadoes through the Midwest. We know there's not. It is too expensive. And so the question then is, do we bring public policy in to provide relief? And I think we should. A lot of my Republican friends say, you can't use government to solve this. Well, listen, in 20 years ago in Florida, 25 years ago, when our taxes started going up too high, we passed Save Our Homes and Portability to keep people in their homes. We capped the increase in taxable values. I think we need a state catastrophic fund for homeowners insurance now. Fully remove hurricane coverage from the private market, put it in a state sovereign wealth fund. It will reduce homeowners insurance by 60 to 70%. And there's a way to pay for this. One, we currently let our insurance companies ship their profits out of state and keep their losses here. If we required what's called combined reporting, taxing on profits across insurance and other businesses, we'd raise almost $3 billion a year. We could look at some of our tourist money coming in. But the truth is, we could build a sovereign wealth fund that becomes the model for the country and the world on how to address natural disasters in an era in which we've ignored climate science and climate change. The bottom line is, it would cut homeowners insurance by 60 to 70%.
So we can make Florida great again. Instead of taking our money and putting it elsewhere, you know, you make money in Florida,
right.
Keep it right here in Florida.
Right? That's it. Yeah. That's right. And guess what else we do for insurance companies? We have a bailout fund for them, but not for homeowners. We have $8 billion to bail out insurance companies that lose too much money, but we don't use it for homeowners. That's actually the platform I want to use to create the state catastrophic fund. Use the current hurricane fund, but now use it to qualify homeowners instead of insurance companies.
Well, you know, Mr. Jolly, all of us, as we get older, we get bolder and we get wiser. You know, your 20s, you're soaring like an eagle. In your 30s, you're flying high. In your 40s, you're untouchable. You're making money. You're investing in the market. Your kids are getting ready for college. In your 50s, you're cruising. And in your 60s, like me, you're like, okay, we got to leave a better planet. How can government be a force for good? Because we often hear people talk about the unborn child. They talk about, you know, people overseas. Folks are talking about foundations that they open to help people. But the truth is, we can't encourage people to carry a child to full term. And then when the kid is born, we say, hey, you got to get a job. You know, the parents need a place to live. The child needs education. The child needs health insurance. That child has to go to a decent daycare where the workers are treated with respect, so that when they change your child's diaper and they feed that child, they give it love. Because when you leave that daycare, you have bills too, not just the parents. I mean, we're all in it together, Mr. Jolly. I almost called you governor. That would have been great.
Yeah.
But how can how can government be a force for good? Because at the end of the day, everybody wants a home, a job, health insurance, and a microwave to heat up their darn food, right?
So, listen, I mentioned I was a former Republican. I'm a former independent. Today I'm a Democrat. But there have been values that I have always held true, and it's reason I found my home in the Democratic Party. They're values that I believe are rooted in Democratic tradition, from FDR to JFK to Barack Obama and so many others. But they're values bigger than our party. They're big enough to include independents and Republicans. So what are those three values? The economy should work for everyone. The economy should work for everyone. Listen, that doesn't mean condemning success. Let's congratulate success. But we don't have to fight the haves to fight for the have-nots. The reality is, this economy is leaving people behind. We need to make sure it works for everybody. The second value is that government can actually improve our lives. It should be lean and efficient, held accountable. We should look to the private sector first, certainly our nonprofits. But there are certain things, like we've been discussing, that only government does, because the private sector won't, right? Investments in public education, access to health care for everyone, a state catastrophic fund for insurance, or investments in workforce housing, the ability to invest in clean air and clean water, renewable energies. So first, the economy should work. Second, government can do its part, and it's not doing it now. And then the third is very simple. We should be a place where everyone's rights are protected and their dignity celebrated, regardless of the color of your skin, where you were born, who you love, or who you worship. So protecting people's rights means your voting rights, your bodily autonomy, reproductive freedom. But celebrating everyone's dignity means, regardless of where you were born, what language you speak, who you love, who you worship, you should be celebrated in the state of Florida. You should be part of our leadership. You should be part of our communities. And I just think, in an era where we have defunded the tools of government, where we have let economic disparity get too far out of control, and we've launched culture wars, there are enough people, as I say, that know we'll never make America great again if we don't first make America good again.
And I like
this. This is about making the economy work and investing in government and celebrating everybody.
Yeah, and I love what you just said about making money. I mean, you know, I think we should encourage people to make as much money as they want. Just pay your fair share. You want to work two jobs, three jobs, you know, you want to work in the trade, in commerce, whatever. You make your money and just pay your fair share. And you're absolutely right. Our country is the greatest country. I know that as a naturalized citizen, when I fly around the world and I see the American flag, I feel good inside, because that's my government. I feel like government can be a force for good, and I see it all the time. I remember that I was speaking to someone at our nursing facility a long time ago, and I know the woman very, very well. She's quite wealthy, and she came to the desk and she wanted information how she can get her parents on Medicaid. And I said to her, but aren't you guys living in so-and-so place and blah, blah, blah? And she goes, we are, but we would like to get on Medicaid. And I said, but weren't you the one who was against Medicaid? That when we were sitting having wine a few years ago, you were against what you consider free products and free services. I said, but here you are, a quite wealthy woman. You're asking me to find out from the social worker how your family, who are millionaires, could get on Medicaid. Well, guess what? It doesn't work that way. We have a safety net for our citizens who need it. And that leads me into health insurance, Governor. We have so many people that can afford to write a check for health care. We have the bottom, people who can qualify for Medicaid and Medicaid services. But then there's the middle class who, after paying all their bills, can't even afford a copayment. Talk to our listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about health insurance. And do you think it's possible that we can see a little change for the middle class with the health insurance woes?
Yeah, so listen, a lot of that policy is written in Washington, and I don't trust that Washington's going to figure it out. So here's what I have offered in the state of Florida. Because again, look, you mentioned the different decades of one's life. I'm 53, but my wife and I have a 7-year-old and 4-year-old right now. So,
you guys,
this is very much
late.
A lived family experience.
Yes.
We did. We started late. And listen, we're privileged, right? I'm an attorney, and I served in Congress. I'm running for governor. But we just removed our family from the only pediatrician that our kids have ever known, because we couldn't afford the plan anymore. We went to get blood work this past week. My wife did. And they said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't accept your insurance anymore. This isn't concierge stuff. This is the basics. Last year, instead of using our family physician, you know, our local doctor's office, we went to urgent care. Because, you know, 6 or 7 times during the year with young children, that was just easier, more immediate, and it cost $100. Here's where I think we have to go. Right now, we know if we can provide more primary health care services to more Floridians, it improves their outcomes and it reduces the economic cost of the state. I think we need to scale up the direct delivery of primary health care services in all counties. In some places, that's county health clinics. In some, it's federally qualified community health centers. In others, it's nonprofits. But we, until Washington figures this out, we have to make sure that the gaps don't grow in health care delivery. And that means using government to invest in the direct delivery of primary health care services. Maybe we'll disrupt the insurance-driven platforms and finally deliver affordable health care.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of women were concerned about all the reproductive stuff going on. Reproductive health care decisions really should be made between a woman and her God and her doctor, not a politician, not a man in a suit or a woman wearing whatever, right? And we find, I mean, if we want to prevent unwanted pregnancies, the best thing is education. And we educate people not just about their reproductive system, but we educate them about academic education. We educate them about trade and commerce and all that kind of stuff. But for people to get involved in other, like my mother used to say, you don't know how a woman's pot is boiling, so don't get involved.
I love Nanny Raj, look, man. I love it.
You know?
I supported Amendment 4. I would fight to enact it legislatively. I would use executive authorities to create safe access. And I would be a pro-choice governor. One of the things you and I have probably talked about is that's not where I was 15 years ago, right? Mine is a story of change, particularly on reproductive freedom. I was wrongly applying my faith teachings to a constitutional question when I was in Congress and started taking some votes. I didn't like it. And so I started moving then. I was the only Republican to oppose a Planned Parenthood investigation to try to save several hundred million dollars for reproductive care in underserved communities. Eventually got to a full embrace of the Roe and Casey framework. And I'll tell you, it's been good enough for 50 years. It should be good enough for another 50. So I would be a pro-choice governor, but that's not where I was 15 years ago. And I'm open about my journey of change.
Well, are you allowed to change? Isn't that what life is about? Life is about constantly
learning. Isn't that the point
learning?
Of our politics?
Yeah, life is about learning and growing. And if someone comes to you and they say, hey, if you want to lose weight, you do yoga, you eat less meat, and you run, you learn. You're not going to be where you were. And I think with politics, people get too stuck on who was a Republican, who was a Democrat. I saw you years ago when you were talking about things that benefits American citizens, not politicians. And I always knew that we were destined to meet. And I'm so grateful because I think you, I trust you. I think the state of Florida should trust you. I think you have the integrity to lead. And I believe you're going to be a great governor. But before we get there, we're looking at the environment, right? And in all some license plate, it says, in God we trust. If people really trust God, they would think about the environment too, because God is the environment, the air that we breathe, the solar system, you know, the solar energy. Every minute we wake up, whether there's a flood, whether there's a hurricane, anything that's going on, if we're overheated, we want air conditioning, it's all related to the environment, which in turn is how we live. So talk to us quickly about the climate resiliency and clean water and ocean economy.
Yeah, so look, climate change is real, climate science is real, and as governor, my intention is to follow the science and put resources and public policies behind the science. So where that means investing in additional infrastructure in clean water, whether it's requiring our utilities to pursue more clean and renewable energies, we're going to follow the science and we're going to put resources behind the science and shape the state's policies as well. And we're going to do it because stewardship demands it, but so does our economy. We have an environmental economy where more people come here every day because they want to be part of the quality of life. It's wrong what my Republican friends in Tallahassee have done. We're going to reverse it.
Yeah. And of course, the culture wars, right? We all talk about the culture wars. You know, I remember telling my kids when they were younger, I would say, if you guys get pregnant, your father and I don't believe in abortion, but that is not my right to take that away from someone else. So whatever your choice is, we will abide by it. That's just, I just want our listeners to know that a lot of us, we don't want to take that choice away from other people, although we feel differently. But there are so many people in the state of Florida talks about the right to life, but then they don't do anything about reducing gun violence. So talk to us a little bit about, I mean, you can't love a child in the womb, but when a child gets shot, like we saw what happened in Marjorie Stoneman, all that, those kids' lives doesn't count. You got to love kids no matter where in the world they are and put policies in place, especially with gun violence here in the state of Florida.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Listen, so on the ending the culture wars is a central plank of my campaign. And what I say is I just use the old school Republican argument. Government should stay out of your life, stay out of your doctor's office, stay out of your bedroom, let you love who you want to do and or love who you want to love and celebrate life how you want to. But you're exactly right. It also means getting the ideologues out of certain places in leadership, recognizing that we can reduce gun violence with responsible gun violence prevention legislation. We can advance public health by firing the Surgeon General and returning to actual public health science. We can create stronger students and universities by empowering institutional autonomy and creating new leaders at our colleges and universities that are devoid of ideology. There is so much we can do to end the culture wars, but at the very base of this is, let's celebrate the diversity of our state.
Yeah.
If local communities wish to paint a mural, God bless you. Go do it. If you have a personal decision to make, our job is to protect that freedom as well.
You know, Mr. Jolly, and for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Mr. David Jolly, who is a candidate for the governor for the state of Florida. You know, when we're taking care of our patients at work, nobody asks the nurse or the physician, are you gay? Are you lesbian? Are you straight? They don't. They just want a good, decent person to give them a shot, perform their surgeries, take care of them. People just want you to be good. We need a kinder, gentler, more world and USA. And I'm glad you touched on people having the right to love who they want and have them in their lives. But really quick before we go, we've seen a lot of issues with the Florida universities. A lot of families are getting locked out of universities. And again, we can't have religion interfering with everything and every school and every university. God lives in your heart. He sees what you do and what you say on a daily basis. And we should be doing something to help Florida families. So talk to us a little bit quickly how we can help Florida families.
Well, when it comes to universities, we should put people in charge of our universities that are going to prepare students for the future of Florida's economy, not for their ideology. Mm-hmm. And that means creating greater access to Florida's flagship universities for more Florida families, not discounting them because they come from Florida. But you mentioned something very importantly. Look, we're going to lose Florida's families. We're going to lose, certainly middle-class families with mobility are going to leave this state because they no longer have upward mobility. And as we mentioned, in healthcare, education, and housing, the state is out of reach. We have to use government as a lever for good in this environment to empower more families, whether it is through early childhood education or a university system, whether it's access to care or basic freedom of someone's bodily autonomy, or whether it's the ability to stay in affordable rental housing or obtain home ownership and stay there. Think about all that. We talk about it as though they're these broad ideas, but that's exactly what has been attacked by our Republican friends in Tallahassee in the last 10 to 20 years. So this campaign offers a contrast. I need people's help, but I think we're all in this together. Like I said at the beginning, this race is so much more than just a candidate. This is about who we are as a state and as a people.
One lady at the gym, and I have to get this really quick, she asked me to ask you about campaign finance and ethics reform. Because she said to me, she almost fell off the treadmill. She goes, I'm voting for that guy. I like him a lot. And she said, but ask him, why is there so much money in the state of Florida? And it seems as though there's no campaign finance reform in the state.
Because there's not. We have the most corrupt campaign finance system in the entire country right here in the state of Florida. I want us to ban the unlimited political committees that allow the laundering of special interest money to our politicians. I support public financing of campaigns, and I ended up with a profile on 60 Minutes for saying that no politician should be able to ask you for money. I introduced legislation in Congress to ban members of Congress from directly soliciting money. Look, and this is a journey of change. I started off saying money is speech, but now I know that it is corrupting. And when I was in Congress, I was offering dramatic reform policies, and I would be a reform governor.
Right. And for our listeners who are tuning in, I just want you all to know that Mr. Jolly has earned the endorsements of over 150 current and former elected officials. And you have held over 225 town halls. And we love you for that because politicians shy away from that. But really quick, I'm going to give you the last 30 seconds. Let's say you're in an elevator and it's stuck and you're there for 2 minutes and you've got some Republicans, some Democrats, some independents. They got some veterans in there, some nurses, a little bit of retail people. You even got yourself a lawyer, a doctor, and you said, oh, you're running for office. Give us your 30-second speech before this elevator door opens. We hope it opens.
We are a nation and a state that is in crisis and is broken and is divided. You don't have to be a Democrat, Republican, or Independent to know that. It's true. We are gripped by an economic crisis, exhausted by culture wars. And I think there are values bigger than the Democratic Party, big enough to bring us all together. The economy should work for everyone. Government can do its part to improve our lives, and everyone's rights should be protected. This is a moment where we have the opportunity to do something new in politics. It's why I got into the race, and it's why I hope people will consider supporting us.
Thank you so much.
So excited. Thank you so much for sharing.
Good to be with you.
Thank you. Everybody, register to vote. We got the primaries
in
August. We got the November elections coming up. Make sure that you're registered to vote. We are going to take a quick minute to listen to our sponsors. We'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture.
Baba Senior Care.
Located in Titusville, Florida, John Dick Financial Group is a certified public accountant.
Join Baba Senior Outreach for our annual Senior Support Walk and Vendor Fair. We're gathering at Wickham Park on May 23rd to celebrate our seniors one step at a time. We're honored to welcome our featured guest speaker, Dr. Visa Cervana, Medical Director of Health First Aging Services, who will be sharing her expertise on our senior wellness. From fresh food to light housekeeping to our Adopt a Senior and Companionship Program, we provide essential support for Brevard County adults age 60 and older. Come out for giveaways and visit our senior vendors and enter for your chance to win a $500 cash prize. Your presence helps do even more. Make sure we tune in and come to Wickham Park on May 23rd for Baba Senior Outreach.
That's wonderful. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. What a great first segment with Mr. David Jolly, who's running for governor for the state of Florida. We're heard on AM 1510, WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere. And my second segment starts off with my good friend, Tara Gibson, who is a candidate for the Brevard School Board here in District 1. So, Tara, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run for school board in District 1.
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for having me back. Always excited to be here on the show, Sita. So thank you guys so very much. Well, honestly, I decided to run because somebody asked me. It's a crazy thing. It wasn't on my bucket list. It wasn't on my bucket list at all. But they asked me, and I took about 30 or so days to kind of reflect the pros and cons of running and what it would mean. And then I started asking people because I knew, you know, running for office is like starting a business, right? I wanted to make sure that I had my foundation in place. So I reached out to different people to ask them, would they support me and be on my team? And, you know, when I got their feedback and I got their support, and I kind of thought about everything and I'm like, all right, let's do it. I saw some areas of opportunity where, you know, felt like I can definitely make a difference and be a strong voice for District 1. because as I looked at the data, you know, I saw in my district there's 16 schools that we cover, and only 5 of those schools are A schools, right? Mm. And I know you said earlier in your interview with Mr. Jolly that, you know, when people move into the area, they look for the schools, especially if they have families. They're looking to see where we're going to move at, where are the best schools at. And so I saw some room for improvement there, and I felt like I could definitely make a difference.
Yeah, and people say the children are the future, but you're making the children the future.
Right.
You're putting their future.
Absolutely.
In you're making it great for them.
Right.
But you know what? What I know about you, Tara, is you're not just known as Coach T. You're also a mentor, and you guide people. And I have to say that that comes from your mom, who has guided you all your life, and she's beaming with pride that you have decided to give back to your community.
Yeah, she has. At first, she thought I was crazy. because of everything that's going on, like Mr. Jolly said, there's a lot of tension going on in our community, in our country, and people are getting exhausted, you know. And again, she didn't want me to get caught in the riffraff, as parents do, you know, as your parents do. They want to look out for you and see what's best for you. But I have her undeniable support. I mean, my mom's been my ride or die from all my life.
You know, I like that.
Yeah, she's my ride or die. So she'll get on me, but she still be riding with me. So
what would you say are the pillars, the issues that you think is the best issues for you to address on your platform? Everyone has a platform when they're running for office, and they pick 3 or 4. You probably have a few more, but tell us what your pillars are.
Absolutely. So, you know, when I started this race, I had to do a lot of research and I had to, you know, update myself on things. But I think I came to the conclusion that first I needed to create my foundation, right? What is going to anchor me? And that's what I told people when I go talk to them. And the thing that's going to anchor me, the place that I'm going to govern from, is a place where I put students over politics, right? I think that's a huge thing right now. So being anchored on my foundation of students over politics. And then I move into my 3 pillars where I have, what do I have? I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I have, it's the 3 S's. So it's students are
safety.
Safety. Thank you. Safety, support, and success. Yeah. I'm sorry. Safety, support, and success.
Well, you know, that's why we say that our show is fun. Mm-hmm. It's unscripted.
Absolutely.
It's educational, and it's quite informative. Because we don't tell people what to say. And sometimes if you don't remember, it's okay. That's life. A lot of people, especially when you hit 60, you forget everything, you know? So how can people support you to become the next school board member for District 1?
Yeah. So it's important for the people to support me in regards to right now I'm in the process of getting my name on the ballot. And in order to do that, I need people who live in Mims, Titusville, Scottsmore, North Cocoa to sign my candidate petition. I need at least 1,000 petitions signed because they do vet them and they throw them out if they're not, you know, if they don't meet the requirements. So I need my petition signed. So if those people who are willing to get a petition, I have partnered with Space Coast Ice Cream. And so they're collecting my petitions for me. And you can go to my Facebook page to find a link to get my petitions. Of course, we can always use volunteers. We can always use volunteers. That's really a big help for us. And then donate. I'm starting to learn in regards to, I'm new to politics. This is my first time running.
They tell you to ask everyone you know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, listen. So we need the money. You know, I feel weird asking. Like, you know, I live a life of service. So I've done events in the community, in North Brevard particularly. I've hosted a lot of events. And I have no problem asking people for money to support my events for the kids. But asking money for me kind of hits a little bit different, but I'm getting used to it because we need the money. So.
Girl, square that shoulder and ask them because the end result is when you get elected, you're going to be giving back to so many people, and you cannot get elected unless people are invested in your campaign. So what do you believe is the role of a school board member? Because we've all seen the school board meetings and how contentious it got. During COVID, the mask policy, the book policy, school resource officer. At the end of the day, we all want our kids to be safe in schools and we want them to get a quality education, right? So what do you think would be your role once elected?
Well, I think, you know, it's going to be a learning curve. So I got to get in there because it's easy sitting on the sidelines to point fingers, right? And I tell people that all the time. So getting in there, learning as much as possible, quickly on the fly like I'm doing now, but also, too, listening. My motto is leadership that listens. I need to listen to the people, especially the people at our schools, because they have boots on the ground every day. They're in the trenches. And I tell people that our educators, our teachers, they're brilliant people, right? But they're being suffocated by so much stuff that's going on that's been handed to them, stretched thin, burnt out, or whatever, that sometimes it smothers their creativity. It smothers their opportunities, their gifts to teach. And so really just listening to people, showing them that respect, and then working together to come up with solutions to handle these problems, right? And really feel like, you know, we're actually working together to come up with solutions to resolve the issues that we're having.
All right. And how would you engage the families in the community so that their voices are heard?
Yeah, and that's a great question that you're asking because, again, like I said, listening is important. So I'm going to make sure I have an open door policy in regards to, you know, email access. People know that they can contact me via email, and that I will respond to them or I'll take note of what they're saying. But, you know, parent engagement, community engagement is crucial, right? And I heard you say in the last segment that, you know, it's hard for people to want to volunteer, but I got to bring this to people's attention. If your child, and which I believe it is the most precious gift that you have, then we have to find the time, right? If it's 30 minutes, if it's an hour, if we call out, it's because our kids, right? So we have to find the time to be present and to be engaged. We are co-parenting with these schools. And if you're a co-parent, we give these schools too much trust. I mean, I understand, but we give them too much trust to just drop our babies off and then that's it and not being involved.
Yeah.
Because they have a tremendous impact on the development of your child. And sometimes there's some bad actors, right? It's in everything, right?
So we have to make sure. Get involved in the PTA too.
Yeah.
I must say that Satellite Beach and Satellite High, we didn't really volunteer as much, but we were part of the PTA, which is good. But the teachers would notify you if your kid was misbehaving and stuff. And I was always on the side of the teachers, and my son was not very happy with that, but I was. But anyways, but you know, we all talk about students having a high quality education regardless of their background. But how would you promote people to be inclusive, knowing that we have such a diverse population here?
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of piggybacking on what Mr. Jolly said, I mean, we have a lot of stuff that's been cut, and that puts a tremendous demand on our resources.
I'm glad you were listening to him.
Yeah,
and I'm glad that we had you on the same day with him.
Yeah, it's going to be important because we're going to need that help from Tallahassee. I mean, I don't think people understand how much we're connected, right? So we're going to need that help from Tallahassee. But finding those resources, right? But also to understanding that the parents have to understand it too, that their kid isn't the only kid, right? And we have to make sure that everybody understands that we need to talk, I need to listen, and then we put things together where we can be in the middle so that we can make sure all the kids are being serviced, the kids have what they need. We've been doing a listening tour. I've been listening to parents, and one of their concerns is inclusivity, right? Making sure that they have what they need for their kids, especially the special needs kids, making sure they have the resources and stuff that we need. So we need to look at that and see how we can resolve those issues.
You know, God always sends great people my way to be guests on the show, right? I was at the wedding minding my own business, and I asked this lady to take my picture because my phone was charging because I'd used it all up. And she took the picture, and then she sent it for me. And I said, oh, what do you do for a living? And she said, oh, I was a school teacher. I was. And I said, what happened? She says, they don't treat teachers proper in the state of Florida. The pay sucks, the benefit sucks, and she says, I found a better job as a consultant. And she said to me, there's a national teacher shortage, and Florida is one of the states that teachers are leaving. So how would you support educators? How would you support and retain teachers here in the state of Florida? What would you say to the other school board members about that? Because that was a good teacher who taught in Rockledge, and she left.
Yeah.
She's done.
I hear that all the time.
And her friends are leaving too.
Yeah. I hear that all the time. And my point about it is, too, is when I'm listening to people and teachers specifically speak to me, they understand what they're getting into when they get into it, right? I hear teachers say, well, the reason I got into it, I knew it wasn't a lot of money, but I knew it was stability, right? Mm-hmm. And so when we talk about safety, I don't mean just physical safety, and not just for the kids, but safety for the teachers and staff that are there, right? When you talk about job security. Right. When you talk about
culture. You have to love your job. You have to love kids.
Absolutely. You have to. And then when you talk about culture, though, as well, culture is so key that I think we overlook that starting at the top down. treating people properly, coming in where people have a sense of belonging, where they feel like in their culture, where they can thrive, people getting along. And I think people have to understand that just because you don't like somebody doesn't mean you can't get along with people or work together with people, right? So it's, I think great leaders bring people together. And so for me coming in, understanding that culture is key. Like, you have to have a good culture. We have to talk about bullying. Bullying doesn't just happen with students. It happens in administrations as well. It happens, you know, up and down.
Yeah,
regards
there's
to teachers.
A little bit of backstabbing
so, yeah,
going
there's
on in
a
every
a lot
profession.
Of stuff going on.
Bottom line, don't trust anybody sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, but there's a lot going on. But we have to teach people, again, coach them up in regards to how to create a great culture at their campus.
Yeah, it's a shame. But that brings me to bullying. There's bullying not just between school children and students, but also staff. We see it in the workplace as well. And I think that all of this starts at home, I think. If you are taught at home to respect yourself and other people, then you would take that to the job as well. The foundation for everything starts at home.
I guess so. But if you look at our country and how our administration is leading, we're seeing a lot of bullying on all types of dynamics, right?
Yeah, politicians.
So, yeah, exactly. And so, and then I'm going out and I'm canvassing, I'm knocking door to door, and we have this red versus blue, and a lot of red people are bullying the blue people. Right. I have some neighbors that said they don't even want to vote because they just don't want to have deal with the backlash of that.
Have you met anybody who is a Hindu for Pope as yet?
No.
Because I'm a Hindu for the Pope.
I have not.
Yeah. So, you know, how would you promote a well-rounded education for every student? Because a lot of us know that a lot of parents are focused on college, trade, the military. As a school board member, you have to encourage other people to vote along with encouraging all kids to be prepared when that time comes. You're 17, you're 18. It's not just about the prom. It's where do you go from here, because you're starting to look at bills, college, trade, whatever.
100%.
Skills for life,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, 100%. And when I speak to my students, I tell them, you are going to be an adult way longer than you're going to be a kid.
Oh,
and
yes.
So I think it's very important, too, to have the parents' involvement as well so that they can understand how to allow your kid to be a kid, but also prepare them for that next level. So that's going to be so very important, working with the parents, getting them to understand how to coach their kids up. Not just use schools as a glorified daycare, right? When you send your kids to school, you have to send them and you have to coach them at home. Like, you're going to learn first, right? So teaching those behaviors, coaching those behaviors at home. Again,
It's a parent-teacher relationship.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, we have some brilliant people. Like you said, your people who are leaving, we have brilliant people who are at our schools, right? Working with them, hearing from them, getting feedback from them of how we can make this better, I think will help make the whole environment, learning environment, a lot better. I know they're being stretched thin. I'm currently reading over the school improvement plans for my schools. A lot of them are so concerned with testing and data and this and that, that they really honestly haven't been able to teach.
Yeah. Well, so for our listeners who are tuning in, we're speaking with Tara Gibson, and she's a candidate right here in Brevard for District 1. So what is your philosophy on the role of technology and digital resources in the education system here in Brevard?
Yeah, so it's coming. It's here, right? And I think it's so very important. I'm at the schools kind of every day. I work with students who are in the dual enrollment program, so I see it.
And you know my beautiful Madison.
Yes. So I'm at the school. So the thing about it is that honestly, some of the teachers aren't confident in technology. So I think there needs to be some extended training for our teachers to help them be more confident in technology and to be able to use it and teach it, right? Because just like in the past, like, everything's evolving. Even our kids are so much more smarter than they are. If they have a cell phone, they're born with the cell phone
in their hand.
Yeah.
And a password. I tell you, the babies are coming out with a password.
But they have exposure to so much more information now that teachers have to really work to get 10 steps ahead of them. Because if not, they're going to lose their attention. They're going to get bored. So learning how to implement technology and stuff in the classroom is going to be key. But again, you have teachers who have been teaching for 30 years or something like that. They're old school, right? There's nothing wrong with it. But it's just very important for us to be able to help coach them up, to help them feel confident to implement that in their curriculum.
Yeah. And let's talk chat a little bit about different types of schools. We have charter schools with schools of choice. Mm-hmm. What is your opinion about the schools of choice? You know, your mom's a real estate agent. Ellen dabbled in real estate herself. And we all know that a home is where the heart is. And everybody wants a community school. Invest in those zip codes. All children count. All schools count. So all of a sudden, you know, we all have evolved where we're like, fine, schools of choice, charter schools, religious schools, vouchers, whatever. But it's getting to be a bit much because nobody wants to see a community school phased out or closed. That is a loss for that community.
Yeah, and I love where Mr. Jolly said he wants to add schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's going to be huge, and that's going to be a great thing for us. But as BPS is the largest employer in Brevard County, and so I don't think people think about that because that touches a lot of people here in our county. And so if you are in that system and you pull your kid and put them in a school of choice, you're actually hurting your actually income, right? Because eventually if you pull students out, then we lose that
and
money.
And they're not held to the same standards.
No, they're not.
There's hardly enough oversight and transparency and accountability. In my humble opinion, a lot of these schools have become like a big business.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like when you said your son wanted to go to a private school. It's just like having designer and then not. You know what I'm saying? So it's just a wordplay. Private sounds so much better. It's like the elitist. People think they're in elite status. And people have to get over that because it's not. It's just smoke and mirrors, right? And not to disrespect any of those schools, right? But it is a lot of times smoke and mirrors. So you have to be really careful about just jumping out and following, keeping up with the Joneses, as they say, right? Because our public schools are great places to be, great, offer great education as well. Yes, can we do better? Absolutely. We can always do better. But before you just up and leave, you really have to consider what you're doing in regards to that and not just fall in the smoke and mirrors.
So that. You're right, because, you know, I see a lot of license plates that says, in God we trust, choose life, what would Jesus do, peace activist. But the truth of the matter is you're driving behind a wheel of an automobile, putting your life on the road with crazy drivers who don't follow the law sometimes. And but God lives in your heart. If you are the operator of a school that only went in it because you have this big building and you could put some desks and chairs and hire a few teachers and you could make money off the government by through vouchers, don't feel you're fooling anyone because God lives right there in your heart. He's watching you. And you could put as many license plates as you want on your cars, but you're not fooling him.
Yeah,
you're
absolutely.
Not. If you say you're in the business of educating children, you better be in the business of educating children because they are the future, right? So what would you do with the limited funding that we have here from the state of Florida that's allocated to each school? I mean, you have to take those funds and allocate it to the needs of the students, the educators, and of course, the administration.
Yeah, and that's something important that we haven't discussed, but that millage is coming up to vote on in the next election. It's going to be really, really important. It's actually detrimental to in regards to our teacher pay. So we need to, people, please do your research. Please vote yes to renew the millage because that's going to be crucial. If we don't get that, I don't know what's going to happen to our teachers. We're going to lose a lot more.
Yeah.
But in regards to the budget, that's something, again, like I said, once I get in there, I know it's $1.6 billion that we had, that, you know, BPS has, which is a lot of money. So that's going to be a lot of working with the people on staff there to understand the budget and how we can move things around and how we can figure out some things of making it better for our school.
But Tara, I'm so proud of you. And I hope people who tuned into our Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today listen to you, understand that we trust you with our kids. You have the integrity to lead. And I will fully endorse you for your run for District 1. But I do know there's pressing challenges in your district. Quickly, if you could just tell us, if you have your 30-second elevator speech ready, what are the challenges faced in your district? And let's assume you're in the same elevator with Mr. Jolly.
Yeah.
You go ahead and tell us.
I was just here with people that, you know, listen, you know, I live a life of service. I've been doing this. I don't have any, you know, owe any favors or anything like this. I'm really doing this for our students, for our teachers. I understand what our schools mean to our community. They're the heartbeat of our community, a gathering place. A place where our kids are groomed to grow. You know, you can either break your kid's spirit or make your kid's spirit there in those places, right? There are safe spaces for our kids who are facing kids in transition, you know, kids who are living in dysfunctional homes. Like, we are that place of peace for them. And so I would just encourage people that to know that I'm going to put students over politics, that I'm going to listen, a leadership that listens. I'm going to work and do my very best to bring people together. But I need their support, not only just their vote, but I need their support once I get in that chair, because I cannot do it by myself.
And give us your website really quick before Danny tells me, God.
It's www.vote4terra2026.com. That's okay. VoteForTerra2026.com.
Okay, and we will make sure we put all of that on our website, as well as pictures and bios of all of our guests today. And thank you so much. Don't forget, folks, if you're not registered to vote, get out there to register to vote. Thanks again for tuning in to Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Tune in each and every Monday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on 1510 WWBC.